I bid you welcome.
I want to play a game.
Stay on the road. Keep clear of the moors.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with.
Let them see what kind of a person I am. Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Hey folks, my name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And welcome to the Monster Monday podcast. This is the weekly podcast where myself and Yaz talk about a horror film every single week. And Yaz, why do we talk about horror films?
Because the monsters in film aren't as scary as the monsters in real life. Boy, does that ring true this week.
It does, a little bit, yes. Hopefully...
sending our love to everybody...
stateside.
Stateside. Not that the UK is much better.
No, no. But did you... everything's okay, yes, because we vaccinated the royals. We're all good. But everything's going to be fine.
Don't go down that path.
No.
Let's
not do that. But what we will do instead is we'll talk about a more recent horror film... got released a couple of years ago. This is Happy Death Day, which is one of the breakout successes from Blumhouse Entertainment. We've talked about many of their films in the past before. And this is brought to us from director Christopher Landon and writer Scott Lobdell. Now, Yaz, were you aware of this film before it was selected on the wheel at the end of the last episode?
Yeah, I've seen it a few times.
Because we watched this one together. We saw the sequel in cinemas. We watched it a couple of times. And it's a bloody good time every time we watch it.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just quickly, I am currently drinking a Bourneville hot chocolate.
Yeah, because you're really classy. You decided to add some prestige to the podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not worth it, to be honest. You have to put a load of sugar in it.
Not good?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
At least it's not white hot chocolate.
No, oh, no, that's a story that will stay between me and you, I think. We'll let the audience...
No.
Do we let them know?
Just tell the story.
Well, the time when we got food poisoning or we got very, very ill.
We need to find a segue to this, though.
Oh, no, we've committed. We're already halfway into this time loop.
So the story is...
okay.
We'd been at a party with my family.
Mm-hmm. Years ago.
Yeah, this is quite a few years ago now, mm-hmm. like more than five,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were staying at your parents' house for the weekend,
mm-hmm.
but your family were...
I think they were
away. They were all away, weren't they? So we had the house to ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, just us.
But it's in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was desperate for some chocolate or like a hot chocolate. And he was like, hang on, let me see what's in the cupboard.
Yep.
And you found this white hot chocolate. And I was like, oh, okay, I've never tried that before.
How novel.
Let's have some. So anyway, I had a cup. It was really nice. I think mm-hmm. we decided to have another one. It was that nice. Anyway, fast forward to 20...
okay.
Fast forward to 24 hours later. Well, not even 24 hours, just later on that night, really,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
More like maybe and 12 hours.
We were both saying, like, I don't really feel well. I think it started with you first. You was like, I don't really feel well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay, you'll be all right. And luckily there was like a... You had an ensuite bathroom,
yeah,
middle class living in it.
Yeah, well, not only that, it was one shared with my brother, where it was my room, toilet in the middle with a shower, and then his room on the other side of that.
Yeah, but he wasn't there that time, so it didn't matter.
No, he wasn't there that time, but I'm just doubling down on the middle classness.
Yeah, very.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden, I just hear this noise, and Will is in the toilet next door. Just throwing up,
yep.
And I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good. Anyway, he gets back into bed, not feeling well, and then I start,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, oh no, I really don't feel well. Anyway, it's safe to say it was coming out of both ends at yep. the same time.
Yep. This is a podcast about horror films, by the way. But
and the only thing that I was puking up was white hot chocolate. It put me off any hot chocolate for a solid 4 months,
and
it was that bad.
And white hot chocolate for life.
White hot chocolate for life.
Yeah,
I can't even look at it without...
We've not had it since.
Having flashbacks to the amount of sick that was done that day.
Exactly. It's one of those days where if only we... it would have been absolutely 1,000 times worse if we had to repeat that day over and over again. But sometimes the memory just repeats over and over again in your head, doesn't it? It's like an out-of-body Groundhog Day experience. Which...
See, I told you there was a way we could get it in.
Yeah, well, we got out of it that way. We still have to figure out the way in, but we'll try and figure that out on the next cycle down. But basically, so Happy Death Day, for those of you who aren't aware, is a black comedy slasher film. It's one of the very few, like, PG-13, 12A rated horror films. That's probably one reason it was able to get mainstream success. But one reason it was able to skirt that rating was because you actually see very little death or very little gore in this film, because what happens is that our protagonist, whenever they're killed by a masked assailant, they repeat the same day. They're in a Groundhog Day style loop. Probably the more recent comparison I'd say would be Source Code. Even then, that's more like a sci-fi as opposed to comedy or horror. But yeah, basically, it is a Groundhog Day pastiche, but with a slasher film twist. And this comes to us from comic book writer Scott Lobdell, who submitted this screenplay back in the mid-2000s. And Michael Bay was originally going to produce or direct it, with Megan Fox being attached to star. This is Megan Fox during, like, Jennifer's Body, Transformers time. This is, like, peak Megan Fox in the public perception. But for whatever reason, project didn't go through. And Christopher Landon, who was the screenwriter for the Paranormal Activity sequels, did some rewrites and was attached to direct it later on. And that's how we got Happy Death Day, when he submitted the revised screenplay to Blumhouse Productions, who he had a good relationship with. They produced the Paranormal Activity films. And instead of Megan Fox, we got Jessica Roth, who I recognised from earlier that year, where she was one of the supporting characters in La La Land. But this is her more like breakout franchise role. And that's how we got Happy Death Day. So unless there's anything more to say, we can get straight into the spoiler-filled plot of Happy Death Day. So the movie opens with the Universal Studios logo, except it restarts and loops over a couple of times before being able to finish. I don't know if we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but it seems Universal are the studio who will be very happy to let strange things happen to their logos or unconventional things happen. I remember the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, where they did an 8-bit version of it and like a video game version of the opening. That was really cool.
That was the first film we ever saw together.
It was, yes. That was our first date.
Well, you say date.
They say date. Because we just happen to turn up with two different groups of friends, and then we just call it a date because it makes us sound more conventional.
Oh, hey, you're up.
We're then introduced to our main setting, Bayfield University, where our hero Teresa, nicknamed Tree, who's played by Jessica Roth, is waking up in someone else's dorm room after a night of partying, hearing students loudly arguing in the corridor outside. She wakes up groggy and disorientated to find classmate Carter, played by Israel Brossard, searching under his desk. He happily greets a confused Tree, whose phone goes off with an obnoxious birthday ringtone. She's getting a call from her dad, but she ignores it, as you typically do with your family. Or is that just me? I don't know. She starts putting on her clothes, which prompts Carter to nervously face away from her when she's getting changed, because he's a very polite young boy. He's a good lad. She rudely asks Carter for Tylenol. For our British listeners, that is...
Is it like paracetamol?
Yeah, it's like an ibuprofen painkiller branded equivalent in America. She also rudely asks Carter to never speak of this to anyone, but in walks Carter's friend Ryan, played by Fee Vu, who loudly asks if he's hit that fine vagine.
Sorry.
to be a university student again. hitting that fine vagine. Outside, Tree makes her way across the campus courtyard to her sorority house, which is like kind of an alien thing to Brit. We don't really have that sort of sorority, Omega Alpha campus lifestyle.
No, it wears me out a bit.
Yeah, we kind of have it in the private schools, but that's...
that's a different kettle of fish.
That is absolutely a different thing. Like, animals are often involved, as we've heard about. So as she's on her way to the sorority house, she passes a climate change prevention activist, a kissing couple who are interrupted by water sprinklers, a car alarm going off, and a group of guys who have been singing bottles of beer on the wall for 26 hours, where one of the men collapses from exhaustion. And yes, these arbitrary details are important. I mentioned them for a reason. She also encounters one of her exes who she's been trying to avoid, Tim, played by Caleb Spillyards, and she emasculates him.
Yeah, but to be fair, she didn't owe him shit. They went on one date.
Yeah, and also that date didn't go very well. Apparently he took her to Subway, and the line where she says that he didn't even have a foot long, that was improvised by Jessica Roth. leaving Tim thoroughly emasculated.
Well, he's just fragile then, isn't
he? He's got his reasons. We'll get to those later. She attempts to sneak into the sorority house, but gets caught by one of her sisters, Danielle, played by Rachel Matthews.
Oh my god. You sneaky little biatch. Who was it?
Nobody.
Sisters don't keep secrets.
Seriously, it was nobody.
Well, I hope nobody used a condom. We don't want
somebody looking like a whore.
Thanks, Danielle. Super helpful.
What are sisters for?
Awful language.
I know. It says you don't treat your sisters like that. Or maybe you do. I don't know.
No.
How were your sorority days, Yaz, as a sister of Grimsby Kappa?
We didn't have a sorority.
No. She collapses on the bed in her room where her roommate Laurie, played by Ruby Modine, is getting ready to head to work as a nurse at a local hospital. I think the hospital is also like on campus for like student nurses, but they also take in
patients. A university hospital, innit?
Yeah, yeah. So Tree is late for class and tries to leave, but Laurie insists on giving Tree a small birthday cupcake for a special day, because this is her birthday. This is September 18th, it's her birthday.
I don't trust this bitch.
You don't trust Laurie?
No.
What is it about her that's setting off your alarm bells?
She's appearing to be nice because she talks to Tree like crap when she gets in. She's like, oh, look who's rolled in. And then she pretends to be all nice and like, oh, I made you this cupcake just for you. And then she's like super pissed off when she doesn't eat it. She's got to go somewhere.
Well, also,
I mean, admittedly, Tree is not very nice.
Yeah.
But she also, like, doesn't own people shit. They're all kind of shitty, to be honest.
But
that's what makes them human, because teenagers are shitty.
Yeah, and the reason that Tree is nicknamed Tree is because trees grow and change, and that's why they nicknamed the writers nicknamed her Tree. But Tree blows out the candle on the cupcake and just throws the cupcake in the bin. And Laurie's all, oh, I baked that from scratch for you. Which, like, to be fair, bit of a dick move. That's not very nice of her.
No, it's not very nice, but then
You've just got a vibe from Laurie, haven't you?
I just don't like her.
Throw away anything that lady gives you.
Problem is, she's one of them people that is fake nice.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point, because the sorority sisters, they're not fake nice, they're genuine
just,
terrible.
They're just outright horrible, but she's trying to pretend that she's nice, when actually they're all just not very nice.
So Laurie is going against the grain there, isn't she?
Well, at least the others know they're horrible people and act horrible.
But
she's just pretending she's nice.
So Tree arrives late in class, being taught by her handsome English-accented teacher, Gregory Butler, or Mr. Butler, and tries to survive a boring sorority meeting where one of their sisters gets called out and bullied for bringing food and chocolate milkshake to the table. Like, come on, she skipped breakfast. You gotta get that fibre protein.
That's so alien to me, that concept. Obviously, people struggle with eating disorders and everything and all sorts, but like, I've never really had any friends that were like, oh, we've got to be super skinny, we've got to skip this meal, we've got to, like, as a rule type thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. In other words, you had a relatively healthy circle of friends. In a way.
I wouldn't go that far.
In its own way, in certain respects. So the sister who's been called out for bringing food and milkshake to the table, she goes to leave, but bumps into Carter, literally, causing the milkshake to spill all over Tree. Carter was trying to return a bracelet that Tree left in his accommodation, but Tree just glares at him, prompting him to take the hint and leave. Later that day, and ignoring more phone calls from her dad, meeting Laurie on the way, who tries to dissuade her for what she's in for, because she goes to the hospital and bumps into Laurie, and like Laurie says, what you're about to do will have very serious consequences. But she doesn't take that advice, and she goes to Mr. Butler's office to hook up, to try and sleep with him.
To be fair, Tree's right, it is none of her business.
Mm-hmm.
You can guide your friend and be like, no, I don't think you're doing the right thing. But, yeah, bad juju from her.
Not able to get much moral high ground here, because Mr. Butler is cheating on his wife. Also, in the hospital, we do see a police officer in the corridor outside. That is important. That's set up for later. Later that night, Tree is trying to get ready for a party, but rolling power cuts, rolling blackouts keep turning the lights off. She walks across campus alone at night to the party, listening to an angry voicemail message from her dad, saying that he was waiting at this restaurant that they were supposed to meet at for an hour. So she walks past a group of student football fans, some of whom are wearing the school mascot's masks, a creepy-looking baby face. One of them, wearing a black hoodie and a baby mask, stares at Tree as she walks along. So let's talk about the guy who designed the Happy Death Day mask. So this is Tony Gardner, who got his start working with Rick Baker on the Michael Jackson Thriller music video, with him on the Beauty and the Beast TV series. Shout out to Rick Baker. He also was a special effects artist on The Lost Boys, one of my favourite films. He's got one hell of a pedigree behind it. He's also, more recently, helped to do the old age effects in that Jackass Bad Grandpa film. He's done quite a lot of stuff recently. He's done a lot of stuff with Christopher Landon, the director, as well. They frequently collaborate with each other. But he's also really well known for designing the Scream Ghostface mask from the Scream Slasher series. Mm. So he helped to design the mask that is used in this film, which is this really freaky baby mask for the baby like mascot of the football team or just of the university. It's really weird to have that. But one way that this thing was tested was that the director, Christopher Landon, would wear these different masks around the office, and whichever got the most freaked out reaction was the one that they went with. And the baby mask got the most freaked out reaction from the team in the offices, so that's what they went for.
I'm not surprised. It is freaky.
It is, yeah. And the mask that the killer's wearing in this is all like beat up and dirty, and it's a bit scuffed. It's really freaky. One of the reasons why the baby mask was such a home run success on a personal level for Christopher Landon was that he had recently become a dad, maybe he was expecting a child at the time of like pre-production, so babies are on the brain and that whole fear of fatherhood and things like that, so that's why he found the baby mask especially freaky. So Tree walks through an underpass, finding a creepy music box playing Happy Birthday halfway through the tunnel. She takes a closer look and discovers the mask and hoodie-wearing stalker standing behind her, but he runs off when she threatens to call the police. But he ambushes her at the other side of the underpass, takes out a knife, tries to stab her, but Tree manages to escape, but she trips over as she does, and the masked assailant grabs her by the hair and stabs her. Tree then wakes up in Carter's room.
I think this is a great kill.
Yeah?
I really like this one.
Yeah, it plays it nice and slow. Bit of a flair for the theatrical with the music box. This killer's got class. And this activates the beginning of a new time loop. It's still her birthday. She ignores a phone call from her dad as if the past 10 to 15 minutes of the movie didn't even happen and it was all a dream. But she does help Carter find the Tylenol in his room to speed up the routine. But that doesn't prevent her from meeting Ryan, who asks about her fine vagina. Tree, confused about all this deja vu, walks across the campus and encounters everything she did the first time. The climate change activist, the kissing couple, car alarm, the collapsing singer, etc. She even receives her birthday cupcake from Laurie, but she just puts it down and walks away confused. Tree zones out during her sorority meeting and looks at a nearby merchandise stand for the football team, which has some of the creepy baby face masks on display. And despite remembering what's about to happen, Tree is too late to stop the chocolate milk being spilt on her by Carter. Tree goes to the local hospital to see Mr. Butler, but instead not to sleep with him, but to talk. Though he starts making moves on her when she says that she's not there to fall in love with him. Which is... That was a bit of a... mask off reveal moment from Mr. Butler, who's like, oh, you're not here to fall in love with me? Okay, let's get it going. Bit of a dick move.
Well, that's what they're like, though, isn't it? Like, that's what they do.
Yeah, he doesn't want the commitment.
They never leave the wife, just a heads up. Oh. They never leave the wife, so don't waste your time, gals, mm-hmm. or guys.
Yeah, these people, they just want their birthday cake and they want to fuck it too. But the wife walks in before Tree can talk to him proper. So at home, Tree is watching a video of her and her mother blowing out a birthday cake candle before she face plants Tree's face into the cake, which is a terrific video. Danielle walks in, does a pretty offensive impression of a deaf person.
Yeah, I forgot she did this. Yeah, and then when I saw it again, I was like, fucking hell.
What a terrible human being.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the rolling blackouts start again, and Tree walks to the party, ignoring her dad's voicemail and walking past the football fans. But this time, she recognises her killer and catches them staring at her before finding herself at the same underpass with the music box. Appropriately, she goes, no, fuck this, and takes a different route to the party house, but finds the front door locked. She turns around to check if she's being followed, but turns around to find the masked, hooded killer standing at the door, and she punches him the fuck out. But finds out that it was a surprise party for her birthday, and that he is not the killer. Instead, this is a guy who Danielle does clearly have a crush on, but it's clearly unrequited, and he wants to get with Tree. So the party goes ahead. She ends up flirting with this guy and getting a proposition to sleep with him, and he takes her to, quote, the Pleasure Dome, which is just his room with loud music and raving lights. But the masked killer sneaks into the room, kills the guy, and goes to attack Tree. Tree does her best to fight back, but gets stabbed by a broken bong and wakes up in Carter's room.
That's a pretty funny death.
Yeah, it's a fun scene as well, because the rave music is way too loud, so she can't. Neither of them can hear the killer come into the room. She can't hear the guy getting stabbed and killed.
And Danielle wishes that they both die, and then instantly they both die.
Yeah, because Tree and Danielle are texting. Because she doesn't want Tree to get involved with him because she fancies him. So her birthday ringtone goes off and she's able to predict everything Carter says and does. She's realising that she's living the same day over and over and over again. Runs off past Ryan and into the courtyard, encountering the same events, meeting the same people who say the same things. I think it's a really good way to get across the time loop concept. I think it's told really, really well. Because this is, you know, it's a PG-13 horror film. I think the target audience won't even have watched Groundhog Day. They might not even have heard of it, so this could be a new introduction to the format for them. And I think it introduces it really well.
This is also a better film than Groundhog Day.
I've not seen Groundhog Day for a long time.
In my opinion. Don't shout at me.
You're not a Bill Murray fan? Not a fan of the sardonic Ghostbusters?
I'm just not a fan of Groundhog Day.
She tries to explain this living nightmare to Laurie by accurately predicting the cupcake and surprise party and that someone's trying to kill her. Tree takes the day off and barricades herself in her room, and she goes to celebrate her birthday alone, but before she can eat the cupcake that Laurie gave her, she searches for her TV remote to change the channel, but instead finds a mystery birthday card. And she opens it to find a spinning baby head, and inside it says, "Enjoy today, because there's no tomorrow." That's a freaky card. That's vindictive.
Happy birthday!
Yeah, you go and die. And the TV also shows a breaking news report of the arrest of a criminal named Joseph Toombs, played by Rob Mello. But the TV turns off and Tree can hear noise coming from inside the room. Because the killer's in the bathroom and is wearing the baby mask and a hoodie, tries to sneak up on her but gets hit in the head with a hammer. However, because Tree has barricaded the door, she can't escape and gets stabbed to death again. She wakes up in Carter's room screaming, causing him to leap up and bang his head on the desk, and she has a full-on, what we can only call a mental breakdown, and she flees without even getting out of her pyjamas, and before Ryan can even arrive, she has a full-on manic episode in the courtyard, but Carter follows her to give her clothes back. I think this film does a really good job at letting you sympathise with Tree, because it's pretty unambiguous that Tree is a pretty terrible person, and like, not a very nice person at all. But she's put in a very horrible situation, which kind of forces you to feel sorry for her.
I don't think she's that horrible. Yeah, she's a bit of an arsehole. She does some horrible things, but she's not completely horrible. Like, she's not stood there making fun of deaf people.
Oh, yeah.
She can change. She's obviously just suffering.
Yeah, she's not terrible when compared to some of the other cast members, but yeah, she's still not a saint.
oh, she's just a bit rude and, like, direct sometimes, like, you know, like, she doesn't owe anyone anything.
I think you found a bit of a kindred spirit in Tree. That's the vibe I'm getting from you.
I don't know about that.
No?
Not an asshole to people.
No, but I'm not saying that you're an asshole, but I think that you would, if you were on campus with Tree, you'd see everything she was doing and be like, yeah, I respect that. I respect that lady. You might not be friends with her, but you'd be like, she seems my type of person.
What are you trying to say about me?
I'm not saying you're bad, but you'd be like, but if someone's like, oh, that Tree, she's terrible, you'd be like, nah, I think she just does what she wants to do. More respect.
Well, yeah, people are complicated. Like, there's being an asshole, like, she does some dickish things, she's not very nice sometimes. But, like, that Tim guy, she doesn't owe him shit.
Mm.
So that isn't a problem there for me. And, like, yeah, she could be a bit nicer to people, like, waving to that girl, and she could be nicer to Carter. But, like, she's not a terrible person, is she?
Yeah, she's not irredeemable.
No, there's room for her to grow.
Yeah, like, if Tree and Danielle swapped places in this film, it'll be harder to sympathise with, like, Danielle as the main character.
And, like, obviously, Tree is just affected by the shit that's happened to her.
Hmm. But what is the shit that's happened to her? Because Tree is trying to explain the situation to Carter in the school canteen, who just decides to give her the benefit of the doubt and goes along with the insane story. Because it's her birthday, Carter thinks it could be symbolic. Carter also explains that nothing happened between them last night. He just took Tree to his room so she couldn't hurt herself. So, Carter's a good egg.
He's good. Although that is the bare minimum.
Oh, like, yeah. the fact that Carter is like a really positive, great angelic figure, but just does the bare minimum, that's an issue with the culture.
No, he's a good guy. Like, yeah, but it does say shit when your first thought is like, fuck, he's like taking advantage of me or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But that's more of a cultural problem than... Carter's a good boy.
Yeah, yeah. But Tree goes over the list of potential suspects who may be trying to kill her, and it's a long list.
Yeah, she's been a bit of a dick to a lot of people.
Including spitting on an Uber driver.
Yeah, that's not cool, yeah, that one.
That one's not on.
What were we...
Suspects.
Right, suspects. Okay, so Danielle... Gregory... his wife... Creepy Tim. Oh, that tiny girl from TJ Maxx that I got fired. And maybe the Uber driver that I spit on last week. I think his name was... What? Nobody's perfect.
Okay, this isn't helping.
So Carter suggests that because she has unlimited attempts, she can try and use the supernatural occurrence to try and solve her own murder. And I think
that's a good plan.
That's such a cool premise for a film as well. So, it's time for a montage. As Tree goes through her list of suspects, she suspects Tim, but at the time of the murder, well, her murder, finds him watching gay porn in his apartment, which Tree finds wonderful. And I love the reaction, because she's on the other side of a window, so you don't hear her, but you can just see her face going, "Ah," which I thought was lovely. But Tree finds herself quickly stabbed by the actual killer, so that rules out Tim. Next is...
I thought it was more of a, that makes sense.
I got a whole, that's lovely.
Yeah, it was nice, but she's like, oh, bless him. Mm-hmm. Then she's like, that makes sense.
Yes. But next is Stephanie, Mr. Butler's wife, and Tree gets in for, like, full-on camouflage gear, and also dyes her hair pink.
And cuts it and all sorts.
Yeah, okay, but it seems to work because she's able to follow Stephanie's movements from the bushes. But she is ambushed and thrown into a fountain by the actual killer, so it's not Mr. Butler's wife. So next it's time to find out about Danielle, and during the next time loop, Tree finds the mystery birthday card in Danielle's book pile and starts attacking her in the street, but they both get hit by a car and Tree starts the loop again. She uses this loop, instead of finding the actual killer, to walk across campus naked, because why not?
Why not?
Yes, so there's quite a bit of trivia about this scene, where because the scenes where they're in the courtyard and the sprinklers go off, car alarm and everything, that is filmed on an actual university campus. So they had to like try and lock down the whole site, and also they had 2 days to film all of that stuff that they needed to. But what they did for this was because... she wanted to be like full on naked for the scene, but they also didn't want people who were like maybe observing, who were trying to sneak onto set to take photos and leak it, because once like nude photos go online, you can basically never get rid of them. So what they did was that they had a skeleton crew. I think Christopher Landon was the only man on set that day, although Christopher Landon is one of the few openly gay horror directors out there. A skeleton crew of predominantly women, so that she would feel comfortable. And Jessica Roth describes it as being one of the most like liberating and freeing experiences of her life. She says, "I think everyone fantasizes about what you would like to do if you just got to live life without repercussions and do whatever you want. Not only did I get to play someone doing it, but I got to do a few of those moments, like the naked walk of glory. Not a walk of shame, a walk of glory. It was one of the most empowering experiences I've ever had in my life. And a huge part of that was because I trusted the director so much, and to portray that in a way that I felt comfortable with. The crew were incredible."
Yeah, I mean, she's not wrong. If you could, like, do something without repercussions, you probably would walk around naked for a bit, yeah, like, in the street, like, hell yeah, bitch.
Yeah, she explained that when they shot the scene, all of the women of the crew would surround her, holding up their jackets, shielding her from outside eyes and cell phones so that footage of her stark naked could not be leaked on the internet. Before they would go for a take, the women of the crew would chant her name, do a little dance and get everyone pumped up, and then as soon as the director yells action, they would flee, they'd disperse, and then they'd do the scene.
That sounds amazing.
Then when the director yells cut, they come back on, cover up with their coats and everything. And she says that she felt such love and female awesomeness in that moment. It's something where I could have a very long and successful career, but never get to do that again.
Hey, I love that. Give her a round of applause for that. That's ace. Yeah, I love that. And kudos to...
just the team. And
the director to... creating such a safe space for her to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. However, after her walk of glory, she gets killed again via baseball bat later that night. And this is a really cool transition where she gets hit over the head and then she falls into Carter's room and into the pillow, into the bed. That's a really cool shot. She wakes up in Carter's room, but in a lot of pain, causing her to pass out and awaken in a hospital bed, but it's still her birthday. Carter comes to visit, but Mr. Butler also arrives via rolling blackout jump scare, which I thought was really fun and freaky.
Oh yeah, it made me jump. I forgot he was going to be there.
And he's got like this weird side-eye glare. Like, he's got suspicious all over him. He asks Carter to leave. Visiting hours are over.
He's jealous though, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. So, Mr. Butler explains that she seems to have suffered major internal injuries and trauma, and that she technically should be dead, which appears to indicate that she is keeping the injuries from every time she dies. I'm a bit mixed on this because the film kind of like abandons this idea later on. But it
no,
also
it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
During she the last just... two, I think.
It no, I don't think so, because she knows she's only got a limited time now to find out who it is. I don't think so. Each time she comes back, she's always strong. Like, I don't think it does abandon it. At all. I disagree with you there.
Well, fair enough. But I do like how it kind of gives the film at least a bit of a ticking clock, because this is... It's a black comedy, but there's also meant to be some horror elements to it. And if your protagonist is basically immortal, it kind of lowers the stakes somewhat. So I can see why they did it. I think maybe for the last couple of time loops, they could have maybe pushed the idea a little bit harder. But when Mr. Butler leaves to get her a drink, Tree escapes, sneaks into Mr. Butler's office to steal his car keys, and finds a baby mask hiding in a drawer in his desk. So is Mr. Butler the killer? Ooh. As she tries to leave the hospital, Mr. Butler finds her, but gets stabbed from behind by the actual killer, who's wearing the mask. So, we get very quickly proven that it's not him. So the killer pursues her through the hospital, and she finds Mr. Butler's car in the multi-story car park and tries to reach it as the killer searches the complex for her. That's actually a bit of a recurring nightmare that I sometimes have, trying to hide from someone in a multi-story car park, because I can imagine that being a really tense environment to get caught in. She does manage to reach the car and escape before the killer can stop her, and she drives off into the night. Tree loudly celebrates her success in the car as she speeds away, but she is literally speeding, and she gets pulled over by a police car.
Oh, no.
So when she realises that she'll be locked in a jail cell and be safe, she tries to convince the officer that she's drunk and on every drug under the sun.
Ma'am, are you under the influence of alcohol or any other controlled substance?
No, that is what I'm trying to...
If I am, does that mean that you're going to arrest me and lock me in a jail cell?
That's how it usually works.
I'm drunk.
You are.
Wasted. And I'm high. You know, pills, weed, you name it, man, I'm on it.
Well, then I'm gonna put you under arrest.
That's a good idea.
She eagerly gets put in handcuffs and locked in the back of a police car, only for a speeding black car to dash along and run over the officer, killing him.
I think this is one of the most shocking deaths of the film.
It's like,
I forgot it was coming up, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, it's really sudden and quite brutal. This officer gets ploughed through. And the car was driven by the masked killer. Tree, locked in the police car and handcuffed, is helpless to fight off the killer, who uses a birthday candle to light up a stream of petrol that is leaking from the police car because it got clipped by the black car. To light up the stream of petrol, blows up the car with Tree inside. That's one way to go.
That one's gotta hurt. Ooh. Also, little clue there.
Easter egg. With a little birthday candle. Ooh. So it is definitely someone who knows that it's a birthday. Tree wakes up, takes the entire bottle of Tylenol. Carter tries to say, if you take that much, you could die. And she says, if only it could be that easy. And she also kicks Ryan out of the room before he can compliment her vagine. Carter follows her outside and proves that she's reliving the same day by perfectly predicting everything that will happen in the courtyard outside. After fast food, Tree ignores another call from her dad and explains to Carter that her mum died 3 years ago. And the reason she's so hostile on her birthday is because her and her mum shared the same birthday, so she resents seeing her dad to celebrate the day. And yeah, that's very understandable, and you can see why she would be like that. She also gets quite introspective as she's seeing who she really is by reliving the same day over and over again, and how she isn't a good person, and that she doesn't think she has many chances left to solve her murder. However, a very convenient news report comes on the screen detailing the arrest of John Toombs. Tree has a lightbulb moment and thinks she's found her murderer, especially since he is a serial killer of young women, and there was a police officer in the hospital she visited earlier indicating that he's being treated there after a standoff with police. Tree runs to the hospital. She's still in her pyjamas, by the way, which I thought was a fun touch. I think that's one advantage to the Groundhog Day repeating format. You've got the same cast of characters, the same settings, but also the same costumes and same outfits over and over again. She's just wearing her pyjamas throughout the majority of the film.
Comfy.
Yes. She breaks some emergency glass to get a fire axe out and plans to take down Toombs. She goes to his room, where the window is splattered with his guard's blood, and behind the door, unseen by Tree, is the masked killer, armed with a gun, not a knife. He shoots the axe out of Tree's hand, that's one hell of a shot, shoots the receptionist and corners Tree at the elevators. The killer takes the mask off, revealing it to indeed be Toombs, who is tackled from behind by Carter. And Toombs then drops his gun. Tree picks it up to try and shoot Toombs, but the gun's out of ammo, leaving Toombs free to break Carter's neck, killing him. It's always the good ones. It's always the good ones who die first, isn't it? Good boy Carter gets his neck broken.
Yeah. Mm.
Tree tries to escape by heading into a nearby bell tower, which I thought was a very random thing to have next to the hospital, but okay. She sneaks up on Toombs, cracks him over the head with a crowbar, but before she can finish the job, she realises that if she doesn't reset the time loop again, then Carter is dead forever. So instead of killing Toombs, she climbs up the bell tower and hangs herself, waking up on her birthday in Carter's room with a crick in her neck, and she...
The crack in the...
Yeah.
But I like that. I like that she realises, oh, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
I can save somebody else here.
Yes.
My life will be much better with this person in it. So she's already changed.
Yes, absolutely. And this is the day she... The next time loop is where she vows to live her perfect day. So she leaps to her feet in that morning, hugs Carter, thanks him for saving her life, and she promises to see him at lunch and asks to borrow the pillow from his bed on the way out, finding time to spank Ryan for his naughty behaviour on the way out.
Yeah, very tongue-in-cheek. It's funny.
Yeah. Vowing to make the most of today, she strides out into the courtyard. Pop music's playing. She signs the petition. She warns the kissing couple about the sprinklers. One fun fact there, the sprinklers would not turn off for about 2 hours. There was a malfunction on set which delayed filming for quite a while, which must have been really frustrating. She also uses the pillow she borrowed to cushion the fall of the singer. She encounters Tim. She reveals that she knows he doesn't like girls and encourages him to be himself. She says, "Get yourself a fine piece of man ass." At the sorority house, she waves good morning to the girl she's been ignoring this whole time and tells Danielle that if she makes it past today, she's going to have Carter's babies. In her room, she apologises to Laurie for being a terrible roommate. She arrives to her lesson late and asks to speak to Mr. Butler in private and ends things with him and drops his class. And yeah, she calls him out, saying, like, if you're going to leave her, leave her. His wife. At the lunch meeting, she upstages her friend's chocolate milkshake meal with a fatty feast and pours the milkshake over Danielle's head.
Poetic justice.
Yeah, we kind of all wish we could do that in that scene as well. Carter then arrives with her bracelet and she gives him a thank you kiss and asks him out on a birthday date later that night, which he says yes to. We then cut to a fancy-ass restaurant where Tree's dad, David, played by Jason Bale, is all suited up and waiting for her to arrive, and Tree finally makes her appointment and opens up about how hard these past few birthdays have been and how much she misses her mother and apologises to her dad for hurting him. He leans over, takes her hand, and wishes Tree a happy birthday.
This day is really hard for me. Brenda. I miss Mom. You know, I miss her so much. I miss the way that she smelled. I miss that crazy horse laugh she had.
Yeah, me too.
And I guess I thought that if I avoided all of it, if I avoided you, that somehow it would be easier. But it's not. It's been so much worse. All of this running and hiding has made me so miserable. And I think I finally figured it out. I mean, it took something like totally crazy, but I'm here. And I love you. And I am so, so sorry that I hurt you.
She says, I don't want to do small talk. And that is the biggest thing I commend her for, because mm-hmm. small talk is the worst kind of talk.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
This scene makes me cry every time.
Every time.
Yeah, every time.
Like
this if you cry every time. And I'm just furiously tapping that like button. Because, yeah, even when I watched this last night to do the plot, this got me in tears again. I don't know why. It's just so well performed. I think Jessica Roth is like, because she's so like amazing in this film, she elevates the entire production. Like, I have no idea if this film would have worked as well with a different lead actor. I think she's amazing in it. But yeah, it's really emotional. It makes me very, very, very.
It's
sad.
A very human conversation, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there's all times where people don't talk enough to each other about what they're really feeling and just put it off and start acting weird or whatever, and or just make small talk for the rest of your life. But don't, guys, just like have it out.
Yeah, and also credit to Jason Bale. I think this is literally his only scene in this film as well.
Yeah, but he makes an impact.
Yeah, he makes it count. He's really good in this. Yeah, and it's a great scene as well. Like top to bottom, amazing scene, love it, makes me cry every time. So that evening, Tree is all armed up and ready to face Toombs again, gets ready to ambush him at the hospital and threatens his guard with a knife, takes his gun and tells him to get help for Toombs' impending escape. She goes into his room to call Toombs' bluff and shoots him, but the gun's safety is on, which means that Toombs can break free and pin her up against a wall to steal the knife that she brought. She kicks him in the balls, which is like massive respect. But he fights back, and as she's crawling away on the floor, an alarm on her wristwatch goes off and a rolling blackout happens, allowing her to escape in the momentary darkness.
That is genius.
That's really clever. And this is actually set up quite well, because in an earlier scene, she's checking her phone for the time the moment a rolling blackout happens. So she knows what time it's going to happen as well. That's not something she's just randomly guessed. That's really well set up. She's now armed with the gun with the safety off, and she shoots Toombs several times, finally killing her murderer. Back at the sorority house, Tree and Carter reenact 16 Candles, with her lighting Laurie's cupcake as they wonder how Tombs got free from the hospital in the first place. Tree wishes for tomorrow, blows out the candle, and then we fade to black. Then, Tree wakes up in Carter's room on her birthday.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Also, I like that. I do, going back to the last scene, I liked the 16 Candles reenactment. This film wears its influences very much on its sleeve. It brings up Groundhog Day later. It's referenced in 16 Candles. Carter, in his room, has got a They Live, like, John Carpenter film poster in his room, a Mystery Science Theater poster. Carter, I think, is the type of guy who would listen to this podcast. I think he would.
I hope so. Please, Carter.
Yes, Carter, if you're out there, please like and subscribe and leave a comment. Hit us up on Twitter, friend of the podcast, Carter. So Tree, convinced that she's trapped in this time loop forever, flees to her sorority bedroom, packs her bags, ready to run away and escape. And Laurie surprises, quote-unquote, surprises her with her birthday cupcake, and then the penny drops.
Happy birthday. Thanks, but I already ate it last night. Oh my god. In my sleep.
What?
You killed me.
What?
You poisoned it. But I never ate it before. So you had to find another way. And then Tombs fell right into your lap. Perfect scapegoat.
So Tree died in her sleep. Yesterday's cycle was the only day where she ate the cupcake, which has been poisoned. Laurie is the killer. When Tree didn't eat the poisoned cupcakes in the previous time loops, she used her job at the hospital to drug Tombs to mask him and frame him for the murder. She asks Laurie to eat the cake to prove her innocence, but she refuses and reveals her motive, her affair with Mr. Butler, as he chose Tree over Laurie. Tree, angry that she's died over and over again over a stupid guy, kicks Laurie in the balls, and the two fight it out.
Kicks her in the vag.
Yeah, kicked her in the fine vagine. But what did you think of this twist? Because you saw it coming the first time, didn't you? Because you're clever.
Yeah, this... Although it's not super obvious, which I really liked, it's not super obvious, but there's little clues throughout that you pick up on. But there was just something not right about her character at the beginning for me when I first watched it. I remember saying to you when I first watched it, I was like, there's just something not right about her. She's fake nice.
Mm.
That's going to come back somehow.
Yeah.
But I didn't guess it was because of the cupcake. And I didn't... There's loads of things I didn't guess about it.
Mm.
And I didn't properly guess it, really. You know, like some films you could be like, yeah, that's definitely them.
Mm.
Definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
It was like, there's something not right about this character. But I didn't exactly know why, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but
so it's not super obvious, but there is little Easter eggs throughout the film, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think if you watch it again, it's a bit more obvious that she did it, but not too obvious that you'd pick it up on the first go-around.
No.
But there's a scene earlier, I think it's like on the second or third time loop, when she's trying to explain to Laurie, like, I've lived this day over and over again, where like she mentions the cupcake and that someone's out to kill her. And the way Laurie plays that scene, like, she kind of does nervous laughs and kind of knows that she's been rumbled, but she can't let on that she's obviously the one trying to kill her with a poisoned cupcake. But yeah, I think it's performed really delicately, really well done.
Yeah, she has obvious disdain for Tree.
Yeah.
She's just pretending to like her. That is really obvious from the beginning.
Yeah.
So you know something's not quite right with her, but you just don't know what.
So the two are fighting it out in Tree's room. Also, Tree punches Laurie in the throat and force feeds her the poisoned cupcake. She says, "Eat it, bitch," which I think is one of the coolest horror movie zingers that I've heard in a long time. Tree then leaps up and swings from her ceiling lamp and kicks Laurie out of the window to her death. And she obviously traumatizes the young student who's been sat at the front steps during the entire film. Tree and Carter watch the news of Laurie's death at a diner, with Tree's dad calling, and she assures him that she's okay and promises to meet him soon. Also on the TV screen, we've got Danielle, who's being interviewed, saying, yeah, it was obvious that it was her because, you know, like, she wears Crocs and she's just all really weird.
And then she's getting mad because somebody's talking while she's being interviewed.
Because Tree's bedroom is now a crime scene, Carter invites her to stay at his that night and returns her bracelet, which I think it's a bracelet that her mother gave her. I don't know if it's outright said, but that was kind of what I thought it might have been. Carter then says what's on everyone's mind and says that her scenario reminds him of the movie Groundhog Day, which Tree hasn't seen. Tree doesn't even know who Bill Murray is. We then cut to black, and Tree wakes up in Carter's room to the sound of her birthday ringtone and Carter searching under his desk. She's freaked out. But it turns out that he's pranked her. It's now Tuesday the 19th and she made it to tomorrow. She's made it to the next day.
Carter, you ass! That's so mean! I mean, it's a good prank, but that is so mean.
I'd do that. I just know that would be me. If
Yeah, I know you would.
Yeah, if I was in that position, that's what I'd absolutely do. Ryan walks in, having slept in his car that night, but Carter kicks him out as him and Tree share a passionate kiss on the bed, which takes us to the ending credits. And I like how that perfectly leads into the sequel, Happy Death Day to You, but we'll probably talk about that some other day. What did you think of Happy Death Day?
Yeah, I really like it. I liked it from the first viewing.
Mm.
There's not much... Tree's a really cool character. Mm-hmm. She's very realistic, isn't she? She's not like this amazingly good person from the beginning and stuff like that. Because everybody, when they're that young, is a bit of an ass. Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody makes horrible mistakes and stuff like that. It's a bit of a dick. But... Then she sort of like realizes, you know, she can change her life at any point, and she grows, and she's just a really cool character. I really like her.
Yeah, and I think that she's so well performed as well. I think I'm surprised that Jessica Roth hasn't become a more like of a breakout star than she currently is. She should be like in a big Marvel or Disney blockbuster or something. But yeah, I think she's great in this, and I think with someone maybe not as talented or not as versatile, this film really could have fallen flat. Because you need to at least understand what Tree is going through and like sympathise with her and not think that she's completely irredeemable.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the drama doesn't work, the premise doesn't quite work. It's one reason why I think, like, love or hate Bill Murray, but he's kind of the perfect actor for a film like Groundhog Day, because he's so, like, he's so sarcastic and he's able to be so deadpan that he kind of works for that film's premise. But yeah, I think this is a really good beginner slasher film, if that makes sense, because this is like PG-13. There's not much gore or violence in it, but it's got enough of the tropes, and it's got like, it wears its inspirations on its sleeve, like things like Halloween and Scream and Groundhog Day, etc. That I think it's a good one if you don't have a good threshold for scary films or jump scares and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a gentle one.
Yeah.
It's a cool black comedy, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's some really cool kills in it, though.
There is, yeah. I think my favorite...
Nothing that's super gory, but I like that we don't see her dying. We see her... She wakes up as soon as... You know she's died, so your imagination fills in that little bit. I think it would ruin it a bit if you saw her actually die. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would make it maybe be a little bit too intense an experience for it to be going over again and again and again. It's able to make it a bit lighter and a bit more easygoing, if that makes sense. But yeah, my favourite death is the petrol explosion.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah.
I really like the first one, to be honest.
Well,
you think she's gotten away, but joke's on you. Pulls her head back and then stabs her.
Yeah, that's a really good one as well. But one thing that we still have yet to talk about is that this film had an alternative ending. It was an ending that was filmed, it was edited, it was put together, and it was shown to test audiences, because I've never been to one before, but so this is only like secondhand information, but you're basically you're walking on the streets of Hollywood, and then someone with a clipboard says, "Hey, do you want to see a movie early? Do you want to see a rough cut of a film?" And then you get taken into a screening, and then you watch like an early cut of something. I know someone who watched an early cut of Mad Max Fury Road, and like 90% of it was like unfinished. Like they had the unfinished effects, it was green screen, it was all this and that. But it's basically just to figure out if they're in the right direction in the editing process. But the test audiences really rejected the ending, and the ending is it's on the original, it's on the Blu-ray. We watched it for this podcast, where it turns out that the killer, or at least one of the killers, is Mr. Butler's wife, Stephanie.
Well, no, what happens is like she wakes up in hospital, and
so she's killed Laurie out the her out the window.
Yeah, that's all done, and then she wakes up in hospital. Carter and her dad are there, and then they get kicked out by the doctor. The doctor's a different doctor, and he says you don't need any pain meds because it could do some damage. And then in walks a nurse. You know straight away who it is. In walks a nurse, and she gets some medication into a syringe, and then she takes off a mask and she's like, "This is for all the pain." And Tree is like, "But the doctor said I can't have any pain meds." And she's like, "No, the pain that you've caused me, Tree." Mm-hmm. And then it's like the doctor's wife. So I think she's separate from the people that is killing her, but she ends up dying anyway because of a mistake she's made in her life. It's an okay ending, but I don't think it's as good as the actual ending.
Yeah, the reason the test audiences gave for saying they didn't like it was because they didn't like the idea that this character went through so much growth and changed and became a better person, but she either dies at the end or gets stuck in another time loop forever.
Like, but that would be, I think that ending would be cool if you played it as a straight horror. So if it was, because that is horrific.
Yeah.
That would be the perfect ending if it was a really,
if it was a darker film.
If it was a darker, more brutal film, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
But because it's played a bit more of a comedy and more of a, a bit more of a comedy, I don't think that ending works quite the same.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It doesn't have the same impact. Whereas if it was in a dark, brutal horror film, it would have a great impact.
Apparently the original version of the screenplay submitted to like to Michael Bay and Megan Fox in the mid-2000s, it was called Half to Death, written by Scott Lobdell. That was a much more gory film, that was much more brutal and more violent. And then when it became involved with Christopher Landon and done at Blumhouse, it was toned down a bit more and made a bit less intense. It's one of only three PG-13 slasher films, according to IMDb. There's only three PG-13 rated slasher films, and this is one of them. So
I think it's good as a comedy, though. I really enjoy this. Like, it's just a cool one to sit down. Like, I like comedies, but I really like horror films. So it's a nice one to have.
And I think you're right that that original ending should be in that more violent, more gruesome original screenplay, which is why you can see why they originally filmed it and had it included. But yeah, the more optimistic, happier ending belongs in the film.
Yeah, people can't deal with somebody who's changed and growth and then all of a sudden dies. That's why that's the perfect horrific ending, but it's not that kind of film.
Yeah. But this film, when it came out in 2017, it was made on a budget of $4.6 million. And its opening weekend was $26 million, so it made its budget back like five or six fold just on its opening weekend.
Yeah, I remember seeing adverts for it and was really excited about it.
Yeah, it was also like that was a great year for Blumhouse. That was the third Blumhouse film of that year to be number one at the box office after Split and Get Out. So that was
Get Out, what a film!
Yeah, so that was a banner year for Blumhouse, and the film's success also inspired a sequel a couple of years later, Happy Death Day to You, which we'll talk about at some point. I think we'll add it to the wheel for the next lot of rotations. But there's also another film that is apparently written. A lot of the pre-production work is done. They are just waiting on Universal to just do the green light. The last update was in November 2020. Where Christopher Landon said he was just waiting for the green light. The film is tentatively called Happy Death Day to Us. We don't have any plot details on it yet. We don't even know if it is going to happen or make it over the finish line. because the sequel, despite being a pretty good film, we'll talk about it at some point, it made half as much at the box office but cost twice as much. Still made a great profit because this is Blumhouse, that's just how they operate. But this could be a franchise with real diminishing returns. But it started really strong. This is a really good film. Like, you don't need sequels. I'm glad it got one, but this is still a really strong
standalone. It's a good standalone film.
Yeah.
But it's also cool as part of a... I was going to say a trilogy, but we haven't got the third one yet. As a collective.
As a little box set that you can get. But like, not everything needs to be a Halloween with 10 films. But it's nice for the people if they can get that gig and do sequel after sequel, but not everything needs it. And this isn't one that didn't need it, but I'm glad it got it. But yeah, that's Happy Death Day.
Yay!
Right, we only have two films left on the wheel, and then
the current wheel. Don't worry, we will be updating it.
Yeah, we'll update it. We'll do some sequels. We'll get some more indie and cult films and classics. But we only have two films left on this particular wheel. Let's go. So, Yaz, what is the penultimate film on this wheel that we will be talking about next week?
The film is The Cabin in the Woods.
I'm looking forward to this. I've not seen this for a long time. I don't think I've seen this since, like, 2012, 2013.
Really?
Yeah, I've got it on DVD, but I've just not watched it. I think it might still be in its original packaging, the DVD. I don't think we've actually...
No, I'm sure I have watched it.
Okay, so you'll be more versed in it than me. But yeah, we'll be talking about The Cabin in the Woods next week by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard. So I'm going to be looking forward to that. But in the meanwhile, folks... Because we do a weekly podcast, we're very used to the repetition and we're in our own little time loop every single Monday. So you should know, Yaz, by now where people can reach us on social media.
Yes, I am in a time loop at the minute, fucking lockdown.
Yep.
So you can find us on Twitter at MonsterMonPod, on Instagram at MonsterMondayPod, and Facebook is the same as Instagram.
So, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of the Monster Monday podcast.
Stay safe out there.
Yes.
Stay healthy.
Look after yourselves.
Look after yourselves. I hope our little podcast can bring you a little bit of joy.
Yes, and if not, we'll try harder and do better next week. As we do.
Yeah.
Because we'll try.
As
trees, yes, we should all be improving and growing and changing as well. Yes. We can all be our own trees.
Yeah.
Yes, but my name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And thanks for listening to the Monster Monday podcast. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Somebody looking like a whore.